LeBron James is not in the movie Eighth Grade.
So is that something that kids like just yell out these days?
Here's what I don't know, if that's something that 7th and 8th graders just randomly yell out. This is the One Seat Buffer podcast, Bo Burnham's directorial debut, Eighth Grade, where LeBron James is said twice. I don't think I heard it a third time. So Bo wasn't going with the comedy rule of three.
Well, you also wonder if they had to like pay an extra like endorsement fee if they had to say his name three times in a movie.
I want to get to that status where you're so famous that you have to pay to say someone's name. What I do know about Bo Burnham's Eighth Grade is that I believe he had to fight with Apple because there's a scene, and it's not a spoiler, but she, the main character, throws her phone and the screen cracks. And I guess the people at Apple were not happy about that happening. Their screens crack if you throw a phone.
Yeah, it's not. It's not an issue with Apple. It's an issue with just physics.
Right.
Like if you throw glass hard enough, whether it's tempered or not,
yeah,
you're gonna have an issue with
it. It doesn't
even
matter if it's like, you know, Gorilla. Remember when they thought the Gorilla Glass was a thing, and you get like a Android phone, and it was like Gorilla Glass 3. Yeah, but if you still drop it or throw it, and Kayla, the main character in Eighth Grade, throws her phone and the screen cracks. So Bo Burnham seems like he had some challenges. And the other interesting thing that I heard him say about Eighth Grade is that I think in either the original script or if they had to do reshoots, don't quote me on this, but I believe he had used Facebook instead of Snapchat. And he had to quickly realize, because the actors in this movie are not that old, they were like, nobody uses Facebook.
Yeah, it was actually the actress, who is it, Elsie Fisher? Is that
yes,
her name?
Plays Kayla.
She was outstanding in this movie. Mm-hmm. And again, if you haven't heard of Eighth Grade, you need to. This is a movie that might be a Dark Horse Awards movie.
Mm-hmm.
Bo Burnham, many people know him as the stand-up comic that is super kind of out there, and he started as a viral video sensation.
Yeah.
And so this is something I think is very close to his heart. He's probably in his late 20s.
28.
Yeah, 28.
Looked. Yeah, yeah.
And so he's bringing that kind of generation to the table in this movie. And I'm 36. I'll be 37 in a few months. So I'm kind of at the upper echelon of the millennial generation. And I don't really know what we're classifying the generation below us yet as, but this I think is a movie that's really focused on that that group of that's always growing up with social media of some sort.
Right.
I mean, I think I got on Facebook in 2005.
Same.
Which we were both in college at the time, and these groups, like you said, they outright just told Bo Burnham, we don't use Facebook for old people.
It's
like,
so
no
funny.
One does Facebook anymore. And I think it was Instagram or Snapchat, whichever one it was.
They used Twitter was in there in eighth grade a little bit as well. But yeah, the primary one, not primary really, because as much as the characters in this film are looking at their phones a lot, they don't spend too much time. Like, certainly they're showing Kayla, the main character, like, scrolling through Instagram and YouTube. But I have to say, I felt a little bleak a couple times in this movie, like, looking at how, and it doesn't have to be entirely accurate, but there's some scenes where Kayla's character is trying to interact with other characters, and they're literally just staring at their phones like, And it's like that I felt glad that when I was in eighth grade, nobody had a cell phone.
No.
It's a totally different landscape. I get that. I'm not trying to be the old guy. I can try and emphasize with what it must be like to be in eighth grade now. But then I think of my own kids that are not in eighth grade, and I don't want to have to pay for all these smartphones. That's the thing that nobody talks about. They're so expensive.
Right.
Verizon, why do I pay you $240 a month for two phones right now?
Well, let's not call out anyone, because if Verizon would love to sponsor the One Seat Buffer podcast, we'd gladly welcome it. But you're right. Like, I think back to what this movie did is, first off, I've been wanting us to be able to see a movie like this for this podcast. Because if you go back through the – the history of this podcast. You know, we started it, you know, late spring. Mm-hmm. Game night was our first ever one. And then it kind of, we hit that run of superhero blockbuster kind of movies. And as enjoyable as those are, this is the kind of film that makes me love coming to the movies, because it's, I've laughed really hard in that theater. There were a couple of moments where I was almost sick to my stomach. It made me remember how hard middle school was and how awful middle school was. And I was a relatively well-adjusted kid, but, you know, there's some body image moments in this movie. And I had the opportunity to listen to a podcast that Bo Burnham was on. I think it was the Bill Simmons podcast, where he talked about he wanted to kind of write a movie that was semi-autobiographical, but he realized that writing it about a kind of an awkward boy is not necessarily as compelling as writing it from a female perspective. Plus, he also thought he could write it with a little bit more perspective, because he wasn't just going to be him retelling stories that happened to him as a kid, and he had to do some more research. And this movie is uncomfortable in a good way and awkward in an amazing way from the jump. And I think one thing that really does that, and the music supervisor for this movie, I didn't catch the name. I saw it in the credits, but it went by too fast. The scoring of this movie is impeccable. It is absolutely does a good job. You're never easy, because it's always this frantic electronica type music, which is very popular in this demographic. That's what these kids listen to. And it keeps you in that sense of being 13 sucks. Like it is a tough, tough age, because you're supposed to be you're at the top end of the school, but you still can't do squat. Your parents still have to take you everywhere. You know, you can't do anything on your own. You're not old enough to do any of that, but you're made to feel like you're at the start of that. And this is an impressive movie, how they take you through that last couple of weeks of your eighth grade year.
Yeah, Bo Burnham, for a first-time director, did a really great job. It's super compelling. It's very coming of age. And for sure, you're at the upper echelon being in eighth grade, and then you fall back all the way down. Even the quote-unquote like popular cool kids have that moment, especially if you – and not to say that – you have to have had to have gone to a large high school. But I went from 48 people in my eighth grade class, shout out to Ascension Catholic School in Oak Park, Illinois, to a public high school where I would graduate with 777. So that was 100% different. And I experienced that the summer before eighth grade when I took a class at the high school. And then it starts, and you literally – no matter how confident you were, I was, or my friends were, I would say that most freshmen, when you go into a building that big for the first time, you just feel so small. And that's how this movie makes you feel. The eighth grade made me feel so small. And even though I, you know, don't have a lot in common with Kayla, this character who has these YouTube videos, I certainly wasn't doing that at her age. But I have an appreciation for how awkward she felt at times, and that desire to try and fit in and almost compromise who you are to do so, but then standing your ground, even though you have like this, and then having those good positive mentors like her dad in this film that kind of help balance her out. I just kept hoping, I'm like, someone needs to just tell this Kayla that she's gonna be okay.
Right.
You know, it's easier said than done, because her whole world is just trying to fit in, like she's some type of puzzle piece. And that's what I felt like the whole time. I was like, no, don't worry about that. This is all crap. Like, you're going to be 4 years older soon and look back on this and laugh for the most part.
And I think it's funny, because you and I are both fathers. You know, I have three little ones. Your third is on the way. I have a daughter. You have a daughter on the way.
Yep.
And it is... I sat there and I'm sitting there thinking, I am absolutely terrified for what 12 years down the road. I mean, my daughter's five. So 12 years down the road, you know, she's a senior in high school. Mm-hmm. You know, 10 years down the road, 15, you know, that 13 to 15 range. one, these generations are more self-aware than I think we were, because yeah, so the only thing that we had to kind of look at ourselves and really evaluate it was a mirror.
Right.
I mean, these folks, this is kind of the selfie generation we're working with, and yes, this is deep interpretation, but I truly think that there's some truth to this, is that, you know, the filters. You take a selfie, you put a filter on it. You know, you are electronically, you know, changing to make it look like what you think other people want to see in you.
Sure.
And that's no different than, you know, cutting your hair a certain way or doing some things this way. But it's a little bit more accessible, and it's a little more and I'd be curious to talk to a psychologist about this. Like, it's a little bit more accessible because you can just click a button and make the change. And it's not permanent, but you're kind of projecting what you want to be instead of what you are sometimes. And I think that it's a real challenge for these young people, and it's going to be challenging for parents. And I thought that they portrayed this father in an amazing way.
Oh boy.
Her dad, which is played by Josh Hamilton, he did an outstanding job of being super, super awkward, not knowing when to toe the line of is she mad at me, or does she want me to still talk to her, or does she want me just to shut up? And, you know, but you mentioned it. I have never seen a movie where there's no eye contact. This film has minimal eye contact, and it's kind of drawn that into perspective. I was thinking about, because I was in an airport, you know, a few months ago, and I'm like, yeah, you're right. We don't make eye contact with one another anymore, because you've got this phone. You talk to people while you text. I'm texting you, talking to my wife. You know, there's certain things, and vice versa. I'm texting my wife while I'm talking to you. You know, you're having multitask conversations. And back to this movie, the way that he tells the story, Bo Burnham does, I really didn't expect that out of him.
Yeah, as much as Kayla's character grows up, so does her dad's character. I think they really need each other. And there's a little bit more to the story than that without giving it entirely away. And it paid off very well. So that's the character growth, is Kayla. Again, this character is just trying to do what she thinks she has to, which is getting online, doing these videos, taking a selfie while you're doing the 1C Buffer podcast.
That could not have been – that was the most dad selfie I've ever taken.
But here's the thing, like, poor Kayla. Like, I just – and I'm not going to tell kids to not do YouTube videos, because she was just looking for this outlet, because – what Kayla does not have, this character in the movie Eighth Grade, directed by Bo Burnham, at no point does she have, like, a friend. And that's what I always had.
Or a mother.
Right. There's no mother figure, and there's no friend. And I think for the majority of us that are between, I would say, maybe, I don't know, 25 and over, I would say we at least would have one or two friends, right? I can remember 7th and 8th grade very vividly, and having two good friends, Marty and Jim, and my buddy Bob. You know, so I had three friends that were always around, always there. This Kayla girl, Bo Burnham, didn't really give her any friends. And is that accurate? Do kids in eighth grade even really have friends? Because these interactions that we see in the movie, these two popular girls that are walking alongside each other are just glued to their phones. So are they even really interacting?
Are they even really friends?
Yeah.
Or are they just... And we see it. You know, I've worked with eighth graders as a football coach in the middle school, and I think sometimes people think about, oh, it's so rough being a middle school girl, and I'm sure it is. I never was one, so I don't know. But it's really not any easier being a middle school guy, and there are a couple male characters in this movie that are amazing.
Oh, boy, so good.
The hot guy, if you will.
Right.
And this whole superlative scenes. One thing that I think that this movie does better than any movie I've ever seen is it takes the stereotype of what a middle school administrator is, and a teacher, and it just nailed it to a T.
That guy's incredible. And
the other woman who did the superlatives, which is a really important scene.
Sure.
It's just really remarkable how they took pretty accurate, I think, things that happen where it just shows the disconnect sometimes between the adults in the building and the kids in the building. And and work that through. And that's when you meet this boy who's been named Best Eyes. And obviously he's the one that Kayla's crushing on. And that actor who played that character that they wrote could not have been more accurate. Everyone, we all know. I knew when I saw that character, super I knew, obnoxious. I'm not going to say his name, but I knew exactly the guy who that was in my class. He actually was one of my really good friends.
Yeah.
But, and then you had the dorky guy who, you know, 15 years from now, everyone's going to love this kid.
Mm-hmm.
But as an eighth grader, he's just destined for some pain, you know, moving forward.
Oh, yeah. Gabe, super awkward. Name? I wonder. I was just thinking about this, like, and I don't think it's a fair comparison, and I don't want you to get the wrong idea if you're listening, but seeing American Pie when I did in theaters was sort of, I don't want to say a coming of age in the same way as eighth grade. Eighth grade is definitely far more compelling and grounded in reality, and not everyone's going to have a Jim or a Jim's dad, but they do a good job in both American Pie and eighth grade with these characters. And yes, you're able to say, I had a teacher like that. My principal was like that. I had a friend like that. I knew three people that were exactly like that. And this, the one kid that you're talking about, Aiden, with Best Eyes, the character's name, he's sort of like Stifler. Sort of the jock.
Yeah. But
and just kind of like.
But is he a jock or does he just wear a Steph Curry jersey?
Says super offensive stuff. But at least I think people liked Stifler a little bit more than this Aiden. Like this Aiden character, I was like, I thought for a moment, like, I don't want either of my boys to turn into this dude.
Right.
Because I would be, and again, without giving too much away, I'd be very disappointed.
Well, and I think, this movie's about eighth graders and there's adolescent characters are the leads. This is a rated R movie. This movie is probably one that I think you could see with your eighth grader if you wanted to, but I would maybe see it first so you could understand
I feel like they could have dropped like the five extra F words and it would have been PG-13.
But at the same time, that's how kids talk.
Yeah, like, absolutely. But I think that Bo Burnham may have done himself a disservice by making it rated R. I think he's gonna have his audience.
That's fair.
How can I sit here and criticize Bo Burnham? But I do think that like there was not. Think about it. What made that an R-rated movie besides some of the language?
Well, there was the scene, you know, in the car and some of the. Mm-hmm. I mean, referencing oral sex and some things like that, that's a real thing in eighth grade. I remember that's how old I was when I learned what that was.
But is that enough to be an R-rated movie? I feel like I've seen PG-13 movies.
Yeah, but have you seen 13-year-old kids talking about it? I think, you know,
that's what the MPAA did. And I know the MPAA is kind of a joke when it comes to rating movies. And maybe they dealt Bo this hand. And they said, you can change this stuff. And he probably said no.
But I don't think it's bad that it's rated R. I think that it's a movie you could see with your kids if you're comfortable with it. Because, I mean, I'm just saying, here's the truth of the matter. Mm-hmm. Nothing that an eighth grader is seeing on this screen is something that they aren't familiar with.
Yeah.
They've never experienced.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They've seen, by the time I'm sure they're 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, they've seen things that are 100 times worse than Bo Burnham's eighth grade movie. And I mean that in the sense of like vulgarity or whatever else would constitute an R-rated movie. I just feel like this didn't really seem like an R-rated. Now, there's the themes, and you're probably right based on the age of the characters, but yeah, I don't know how I feel saying that if my son, my oldest, was 13 as opposed to 6, that's how old he is now, would I feel comfortable sitting with him watching this movie? I would like to say yes. I would like to think that our relationship would be to the point where we could go to a movie like this that is a far cry, as you mentioned, from any blockbuster, thriller, whatever, and really take something meaningful away from it. I would love to say that that would be the case, but I don't know. It would be interesting to hear from parents that have sat in a theater like the Palms 10 in Muscatine, Iowa, and watched eighth grade with a 6th, 7th, or 8th grader.
Yeah, and they just got this movie this week, and so hopefully folks will come out and see a little bit more, because I really believe One of the movies I thought of as it kind of opened up, just because it was a little bit different. It's more dialogue driven, character driven. And, you know, the shots do a nice job, the cinematography, you know, following Kayla around, because that's really what the story is. It's kind of following her story. And so you're seeing her from the back, and you're seeing her posture change depending on what her mood is. So there was a really good attention to detail, but it reminded me a little bit of a Jason Reitman movie. I mean, it had some Juno-esque elements to it, which Juno to me is the first movie I kind of thought of as this movie started to unfold, because it is, you know, the telling of a very serious story with adolescence still being the central thesis of it. And, you know, this is a girl who struggles with self-confidence. And I don't know that I've ever encountered a young woman who hasn't struggled with that. And they even did a good job of, even with the popular girl, if you notice, like in the pool scene at her pool party, which is a great shot scene, like it's really well done, but she's wearing a bikini, and she's an attractive actress. I mean, she's clearly supposed to be the attractive popular girl, but even then her posture was kind of guarded and protected, because at the same time she's 13, like, she's still not comfortable in her own skin, and it humanized a character that oftentimes in movies is demonized. Like, this girl was not she's definitely an antagonist, but you understood that girl. You didn't feel like she was a monster, like, say,
I think she
did a nice job of making it real.
Like all of us flawed, right? Whether you show your flaws or not. And I think for Kayla's character, deemed most quiet in the start of the film, she's trying to find her voice. And she tries to do that with YouTube videos and with trying to assimilate. And she has a great experience at this high school shadow day. And that's where you start to feel hopeful. You're like, oh, you know what? She got to go to visit a high school and made a friend. And then there's some great sequences there. And then it kind of takes a turn with, again, not giving everything away. But Bo Burnham definitely did a good job of I don't want to say keeping you guessing, because it's not like a whodunit or a surprise thing. But I did appreciate the fact that he could have just rode that out, like awkward girl meets, you know, friend and shadow day, and then becomes more confident overnight, you know? And that's not what happened.
Yeah, and I like that they didn't shy away from some things that just really exist. I mean, they talked about, you know, people's like dirty photo file that they have.
Yeah.
And sadly, you know, a lot of our kids today have taken, you know, nude selfies and pictures of themselves in their underwear, and they keep them in a folder on there, and they're sending them back and forth to one another. And that's a real thing. And so I like that they didn't shy away from it. You know, I like that I think back to being an eighth grade boy and some of the things that we would say to each other and to girls, and you think back, you're just like, man, I hope my kids are never like me, because I did some stupid stuff. And I think we all, for the most part, grow out of it, or you realize you're only doing it because you think it's what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's that moment where she does stand up for herself in a situation that's extremely uncomfortable. And we all knew it was coming as you're watching the movie. I mean, everyone could see it happening. But, you know, you mentioned that high school shadow. Did you guys ever do that, like high school shadow?
No, I felt like I would have loved to have done that, because I think I would have had – it would have been nice, right, going from 48 kids in an eighth grade class to 777 in this massive building. I wish we would have had that. I was almost jealous of Kayla's character that she was able to do that, because I thought, oh, my gosh, this is so great, because you're going from – you get this sort of confidence being an eighth grader, and then, as I mentioned earlier, it kind of fizzles once you realize, like, oh, now we go back to being at the bottom of the totem pole, so to speak. But, yeah, I did not. Did they do that in Muscatine?
They didn't do it that I can remember, but my older brother was when I was a freshman in high school, my brother was a senior. So I was often around other high school kids, and the thing is like, you look back at it and you're like, I was kind of that. I really related to the Kayla character, because I was a theater nerd. Like, I was in the musicals instead of playing basketball in middle school. And I played other sports, but kind of everyone kind of knew that I was, you know, into the arts and that sort of stuff. But then you get to high school and it's, you realize that you can kind of find your tribe a little bit. And I think that's the hardest thing about this is there is no tribe in middle school. You're all changing so quickly. And the sex education scene, the video where they have to watch that.
I don't know if that's real or not, but that was
I don't know if it's real or not hilarious. Either. But just the way that that woman opens up the first video.
Oh, my god!
Where she's like, it's going to be lit. Like, that is totally something that an out-of-touch adult would say to try and make it cool. And I cringe at any sex education moment because I went to a Catholic school where they didn't – obviously, we had nuns as teachers, so our teachers didn't teach that unit. They brought in medical professionals to come in and teach the two-day unit. Well, my father is a medical professional.
Oh, no.
And my father was the person that was brought into the school to teach the sex education unit. We didn't have a nifty little film strip. We just had Dr. Krausar at the front talking about how you're going to start going through some changes.
Talking about the big unit.
Well, speaking of which.
Perfect.
His fly was down while he's doing this.
Oh, my gosh.
And one of my friends, Dan Kirker. Mr. Krausar, your fly's undone.
Oh my gosh, that's like the most.
So I see
your
that.
Dad, though? Your dad's super, very
well, that's what he said. He goes. Well, I was just going to talk about things that may happen in your life that are embarrassing, and here's a great example of that.
Gosh.
And so he turned around, but it was just one of those things where the minute they go into that scene, I felt like a 12-year-old kid all over again, like just mortified.
No, it's so uncomfortable.
Like, it's just super uncomfortable to have that go on.
It's one of those things you can see movies like eighth grade and there's instances and you're just transported back, like immediately transported back to that moment like Joel's describing. And Travis, who's the GM at the Palms 10, you probably have seen movies like that over the years where you're like, oh my gosh, that happened to my friends and I, or that happened to me as a young adult. I mean, that's what is so great about movies like Eighth Grade and people like Bo Burnham that understand how to really get those genuine reactions or those genuine predicaments to put their characters in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, having watched a lot of movies, that's just something that it doesn't really matter. If you watch a lot of movies, you're going to run into a situation where you're like, oh my gosh, this takes me back. But haven't seen this movie yet. Just hearing you guys talk about it here a little bit for the last 5 minutes or so, definitely, I would say, I can totally relate to probably this movie really well as an adult having gone through eighth grade at one point in time. And I'm going to ask a couple of questions just because I want to hear your guys' response on it. If you've already touched on it, I do apologize. Is it the kind of movie that is, I just see it being the kind of movie that really helps adults kind of understand what eighth graders are going through? And is it also the kind of movie that will help like kids kind of understand what like they're going through as well? Is that kind of what I'm getting, or is this really more of an adult movie that's supposed
no,
to help them?
I we actually briefly kind of said I think if you wanted to bring your eighth grader or high schooler to it, that it would be okay. And I do think that it does give parents some perspective, and I also think it gives parents some hope that you just keep talking to your kids. I mean, they may push you away. And I loved how the final scene ended with some of the shots of the dad and the mom talking to one another. I mean, it's just not dad and the mom, dad and the daughter talking to one another. It just it gives you that. There was always a tenor of hopefulness that things were going to come back around, and even though it's a rough spot for this girl,
I bet that a lot of parents with children around that eighth grade age would be sitting there initially thinking, that's not me. I'm not like that. And then they would have that light bulb, oh gosh, moment. Like, that is exactly the kind of relationship. Because, again, having not grown up immersed into a screen per se, or constantly worried about if people are liking or, you know, commenting on things, you know, in regards to social footprint. I don't know, but I do hope that this really, for parents that see it, it'll be interesting. Like, I think about my mom, you know, who has my brother and I, 34 and going to be 32 Two, I wonder what she would think, like if she would remember those awkward years when you're, I can't even imagine. It's such a weird thing. It's like full circle. That's the effect I have, is like, holy cow, because for a lot of this movie, the dad's just like, hey, how's it going? And the kid's like, fine. And I'm thinking like, oh no, is that going to happen? That sucks.
Do you remember doing that to your mom?
I do. And I always,
yeah, me too. I was,
I
like,
think,
oh.
I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I was perfect, but I like to say that I had a lot of perspective early-ish in life, you know, and certainly by the time I got to college, I had a lot of perspective. Like I could miss this class. And then I would remember like my mom is doing home daycare and my dad's a cop in a terrible neighborhood in Chicago. And I'm at a private college in Davenport, Iowa, where I can go eat whatever I want from a cafeteria that's in the, you know, freshman year. I did that a lot to myself, where I had a lot of perspective. But I mean, absolutely. I remember being a bastard, probably, right? Like not yeah. being a good son. And I think that for a lot of us, I don't want to say that this is the case for everybody. And I don't want to say that you have to go through these phases, but you just feel for the dad in eighth grade. You're like, oh, man.
So there was a great moment where he was talking about – she was talking about a food that she liked. And he's like, I'm pretty sure you told me you didn't like it. I think I wrote it down in my app so I didn't, like, screw it up. I
made a note.
Yeah, but it's like you think about that. I think about that as a dad now. You know, I have a 7, a 5, and a 2-year-old. So they're starting to really have some personality and mm-hmm. Be very particular about what they want. And you do write that stuff down. You're like, oh, she does not like watermelon. Do not put right. watermelon on her plate. Like, it's one of the few fruits she doesn't like, but it just is what it is.
It's a trigger.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like we try to avoid triggering reactions. So to answer Travis's questions, yes, this movie, Eighth Grade, will be super beneficial, in my opinion, to parents. And I think it would be kind of a boy, I don't know. It would be fascinating to put a room, not a theater, but maybe half the theater full of eighth graders, and to get their genuine reactions. Like, did they do a good job connecting this to the real world as of right now? I would say that they did, but I'm 34 and it's been a while since I've been in eighth grade. But Travis, I think that would be like, I'm not saying we need to do a test group. Obviously it tested well. It did well. It's getting rave reviews, 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. Critics love it. It's a very, very good movie. But wouldn't that be fascinating to hear what a room of eighth graders would have to say? I mean, I would be all ears. Like, how accurate is it? And maybe it would be things that you would almost want to have confirmed, because again, you are watching a movie. So there's that part of me as well that's like, well, that certainly can't be the case, right? And you see it a lot. You employ a lot of young people. So I bet when you see this, Travis, you're going to be like, yep, that's just like so-and-so. That you'll probably have that thought.
I can almost guarantee I'm going to have that thought. I mean, I've just heard things about the movie and I'm already like, yep. Yeah. And I mean, I'm not living in middle school by any means, but right. with my particular job, it's kind of just like a perpetual, like, I'm kind of stuck in like that late high school stage just because that's who I work with every day.
Yeah. I mean, your employees are 16, 17, 18 years old.
I'm a 27 year old. And exactly. I'm a 27 year old living basically my life with teenagers. It's basically like a teacher. Like,
right. That's an excellent point.
The difference is like, I'm not sitting there, you know, trying to get them to be quiet and teach them something. I'm trying to get them to be more outspoken so that they can help people. And I'm trying to like get them to be more personable and getting them to be more of who they are in a social sense. So that way they can grid out there and they can communicate with people and they don't have to be awkward. So I'm really getting to know these kids and I'm really dealing with, you know, probably exactly what this movie is going through. And for me, when I watch this movie, it's not going to be a, oh, that happened. It's going to be like a, yep, I've seen that. I saw that this morning. I'm going to see that in like 3 hours. I've seen that. That's life for me.
Well, and they did a nice job of, I'm glad they tackled the issue of the active shooter drill. Like, you walk into this, they go to a quick cut. The cuts in this were awesome, how they went from scene to scene. And, you know, here's a person with a AK gun
yeah.
in tactical gear with a black mask on. And I have a history with this topic. I used to work for a school security company. I helped develop a company that ultimately is working in the active shooter world of stopping them. And this is true. This is what our kids today go through. And this isn't a big liberal diatribe. We can't walk away from it. These kids, these are eighth graders. When I was in eighth grade, the scariest thing that we ever had was there's a bomb threat to our school. And we all went out to the field and just like waited for us to be able to go back in.
It was terrifying. Like
shout out to the drama club. That was one of my favorite lines in the entire movie.
Yeah, that was pretty good. But that active shooting thing. So there's these moments where you're like, no. They're
real.
Going through that on top of, like, I couldn't even imagine, again, being in seventh or eighth grade dealing with life.
Yeah, you've got kids who
are
scared to wear sweatpants at school because of the hormonal changes for the boys. But then on top of that, like, is this the day that we actually have to hide under our desks and hope that nobody bursts through the door?
There's
like,
some gut checks for sure in eighth grade. I mean, it definitely – There's scenes that you'll laugh really hard at. The pool scene with the kid with the goggles on is just brilliant. Brilliant. That kid, I hope
Ryan is his name.
I hope he becomes a famous. He's got a great name. He's destined for greatness. Like, he's hilarious. And I don't know.
He wins the movie almost. Like, he almost is the best part of the movie.
And I wonder if that's Bo Burnham. Now, certainly Bo Burnham went viral in March of 2006 when YouTube was not even really a thing.
He was one of the first YouTube sensations.
He blew up. So I mean, like, his perspective is a little bit different than Kayla, the main character.
Did he go to archery camp? That's the question.
He very well may have. He very well but Bo's perspective is he probably put out however many videos before that one goes viral, and then it changes the course of his whole life. He was smart for sure, ahead of his time.
Well,
what happens to Bo Burnham if he doesn't go viral?
Well,
Kayla's character is she's getting no traction online. So I wonder for him, what place did he go to? Did he talk to young people that are posting things on YouTube that don't have, you know what I mean? Because he had an entirely different experience personally.
Well, it is definitely a thing, a vehicle now in playwriting and screenplays that it works, because you think of last year, if you follow musical theater at all, the musical that took the world by storm was called Dear Evan Hansen. Mm-hmm. And the protagonist in that musical gets caught in a lie, but he is a YouTube, he goes viral. Like he, a kid in their class committed suicide. He didn't have any friends. He's an outsider. But what he did is he made a YouTube video basically saying, we were friends. You know, and he said he has this brilliant speech, and he gets kind of caught up in a lie. But that's a different movie or a different story. But what it is it's telling you how this generation, when something goes wrong, and we saw it, you know, with the shooting in Florida, with those students, and when something goes wrong, this generation takes to social media because they know it has an impact. And when something goes right, they take to social media. When everything happens in their day, they take to social media. And this girl, she didn't have a lot of confidence, but she knew she wanted it. And that's a great part of the movie where she talks about confidence. And I don't want to spoil that monologue, because I think it's that itself, that monologue on confidence, is worth the price of admission alone. Mm-hmm. But how they go to this YouTube video, how she does all this, I would have been so clueless in eighth grade.
Oh, yeah.
And so scared. As much as I didn't mind being out in the forefront of people, I've been so terrified to put something in immortality on the internet that's never going away.
Right.
And there's almost an indoctrinated courage in this generation, because they're not scared of permanence. They're not afraid of having something be there forever, because that's always been what their life is like.
So I'm a little bit younger than the two of you, and I can really talk on this. Putting something online is not a hard thing for this generation, because if nobody sees it, it doesn't matter. I mean, like, you put it online, this girl, it sounds like she has a hard time getting her social media to take off. She wants it to take off. nobody's seeing it. So if you keep on putting stuff out there and it never takes off, it never becomes a thing because nobody ever, like, nobody's seeing it. It's not a big deal.
It's the whole if the tree falls in the forest.
Thing. And then, exactly, it's exactly like that. And when it does take off, then, you know, ideally, you're going to be putting out so much content and you're going to be, you know, there's going to be so much out there and you're going to be so popular that those things that you put out that aren't a bit like that are, were not your best moments, those are just going to disappear in the mass. You're going to have so much, there's going to be so much stuff to sift through that the chances of people picking out those little grains of it was not a good moment won't exist anymore. Yeah, you'll have a little bit of backlash at that one moment when it was a bad situation, but beyond that, it just disappears. So, and that's just, like you said, it's indoctrinated into, like, this age. Everybody wants to be famous. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to have that huge following of people, and it's just...
When you have no freaking clue what you are when you're in eighth grade, that's what makes this age, and this movie does a great job of capturing that. What makes it so terrifying is because you have no freaking clue what you are when you're in eighth grade. Think about what you were like. What I thought I was, I've grown into nothing like that person that I thought I was supposed to be or thought I was going to be. And that's what makes it so challenging. And I mean, you feel bad for this girl, but you always have this feeling that she has what it takes. And I think that was something that was really well written in the script. And I think that's what makes this movie rewatchable. There are some movies that you see these, mm-hmm. and you're like, I'm moved by it. It's so powerful. Precious, for example.
Sure.
There's a movie that was very powerful, but the rewatchability of that movie is non-existent. I never want to see that movie again. I enjoyed it. I know why it was the critical sensation that it was. This movie, I could see myself, you know, maybe a couple years from now, or maybe if my wife decides she wants to go see it, I absolutely would see it again. There is that rewatchability factor because as bad as it can be, there is that undertone of real positivity in the writing of this script.
I think Bo Burnham and his crew could have gone a whole different direction with this, and I'm glad that it sort of comes to a head, or if you will, the way that it did. You know, I for one would say that there are certainly movies that I have seen. This is going to sound crazy, but Forrest Gump is a movie that I love. I bought it on DVD years ago, and I could probably watch it now, but for a couple of years it was almost like too heavy-handed. And eighth grade is heavy-handed, but it's grounded in this reality, and that's what Bo does a really good job of. So just when you think to yourself, like I mentioned earlier, oh, I'm watching a movie, I'm here at a movie theater watching a movie, there'll be something that happens in eighth grade that's so real that all of a sudden you just sort of get like checked back in. You're like, oh, wait a minute. Yep. This is really well done. It's almost like documentary style film. And that's where A24, the production company that released eighth grade, that's a company that's super ambitious. And can you imagine when a Bo Burnham, you know, approaches whoever he approached to get this done, what their initial thought was? Like, what? Like, if I, and I've interviewed Bo Burnham, and I talked to him when he was younger, found his videos on break.com when that was a thing to find funny videos. And, but I couldn't, you know, it was longer than 5 years ago, probably 7, 8, 9 years ago when I talked to Bo, I would have never have thought this is a guy that's going to go on
and maybe win an Academy Award for writing a movie.
At 28 is going to put together a pretty incredible film. You don't know who you are in eighth grade. I bet Bo Burnham, and maybe he did eventually want to direct movies, but what do you think trying to exist.
Well, when you look at his bio, though, I mean, he is a theater kid. He did like Shakespeare in the Park and stuff like that as a youngster. He mentions in an interview I've heard with him that he got into the viral video because he's a talented musician and he would write these funny songs.
Mm-hmm.
And his brother, I think, was at college. And so he'd write a song, he'd record it in his bedroom, and that YouTube is the only way that he could really get it to his brother.
That's awesome.
At college. And so that's kind of how this star was born. Oh, not to talk about a trailer that we did see.
Right.
But, that's kind of how this got its momentum going. And I just can't say enough about this movie. I'm very thankful that the Palms Theater got it. This is the kind of movie that sometimes gets stuck in a limited release kind of vortex, yeah. and Midwest doesn't get this movie. You have to wait for it to come out some other. And this is an absolute movie. We want you to see it in the theater, but this is absolutely a movie that maybe you come see in a theater with your husband, wife, mom, dad, boyfriend, girlfriend as an adult. But then when it comes out, you know, 5-6 months from now in the, either a streaming format or a Redbox, what have you, this is one that maybe that's when you sit down and watch. We've talked about that before. This is a sit down with watch with your kids at home kind of movie. I think this kind of maybe falls in that category.
And this is the kind of movie, this is why it's important when you find a movie you want to watch or you have hear about a movie, it's important to talk to your theater about whether or not they're going to get it. Because this movie, I am fairly confident the reason we got this movie was because people asked for it. Nice. Somebody asked me about it. I'm sure some people asked at other theaters.
Well, we talked about it on the podcast a couple weeks ago, too.
And I brought it up to the person who takes care of putting the movies in our theater. And I was literally like the next day. I mean, it was like, I don't know if this is on your radar. I don't know what the situation is. This might be a movie you want to look into to get here. And the next day I got an email and it was being, he got it for like 6 or 7 different theaters in our company. So it's important to talk to your movie theater, whether it's the Palms here in Muscatine or whatever other theater you attend on a regular basis, talk to them about the movies you want to see, because that's the only way they're going to know whether or not there's an audience for a movie.
Yeah, and that's a couple less than probably maybe a year ago or so when The Big Sick was here.
Uh-huh.
There are so many examples like that. This, you know, eighth grade, Big Sick, there's smaller movies like that that you just kind of cheer for and you get behind. And when it shows up into your town, you definitely got to go out and see it and support it, because, you know that your movie theater, your local theater is going to have the next Marvel movie and the next Disney live action, and it's going to be packed, and that's fine. There's a place for all of these movies, but these little engines that could,
yeah,
these like, eighth grades and these.
You think of movies like Eighth Grade. I think of a movie like Saved.
Sure.
You know, the smaller independent movies that still have big backing because they're like, you know, the right people are pushing them. You're almost never disappointed by it. I think the only movie that was like really artistically pushed that I saw and was completely disappointed by was Lost in Translation. That's a movie that completely lost me. This movie, it had me from the first scene, the opening scene, and at the end, I just absolutely loved it. And so if we're going to our rating system of would you violate the one seat buffer to see this movie, would I sit shoulder to shoulder with total strangers in the packed movie theater? Absolutely.
Yeah, it would be really exciting, to echo what Joel said. It would be really exciting to sit in a packed theater for a movie like this and not have it be your typical packed movie, right?
Yeah, I mean, we saw it at 9:50 at night, so it's not always.
But yeah, 100%, I would sit next to a stranger and be uncomfortable and not sure which armrest was mine. That's all.
I laughed out loud so hard at some points of this movie.
Oh, it's pleasantly surprising as far as the comedy goes. And like I said, you know, there are a few things that make this an R-rated movie, but nothing that I really felt like, whoa, I don't know if a kid should see this. I'm not going to bring my 6-year-old, of course, duh. But I didn't get that sense from this. And I think what's also exciting is that we're living in this era of first-time directors having great success. And I give a shout out to Jordan Peele, who did it with Get Out, and Bo Burnham, who's done it now with Eighth Grade. Two people that were maybe put into a box, but you always kind of thought like, yeah, Bo Burnham is very smart. Yeah, Jordan Peele, super smart, super funny, more than just an impressionist or an actor.
But what you're seeing is, you know, 40 years ago, if you wanted to get into directing something, you had to learn a lot of technical stuff. You had to learn how to cut film, literally how to trim film, how to do certain things. Because now these kids, I mean, Bo Burnham would fall under this kid category. I mean, he's always existed with the internet and cell phones. And they grow up producing movies as 13-year-olds, 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
You know, they know how to do that. And he did direct several stand-up comedy specials for some of his friends. So, I mean, and Jordan Peele did some directing on their sketch show that they had, Key and Peele. And so there's more minor league opportunities, if you will, for these folks, that when the time comes that they get that green light from a studio to go with it, they've got the skill. I mean, they know what they're doing, and it, and they don't, they're not going to get bogged down by the technical side that so many, I think, first-time directors could really get lost in.
Yeah, and I mean, making movies now is just so easy, in all honesty. I mean, if anybody wanted to make a movie, really all it takes is time.
Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily make it good. They could make a movie, but
I mean, you can't necessarily make a good movie. That takes artistic talent.
You should see the Huck Finn movie my friends and I made in high school.
Anybody can make a movie, though. Like, anybody can take the camera out there and shoot it and go in and put it on their computer and edit it. And I mean, like, the difference between a good movie and a bad movie is how you tell the story.
Right.
But speaking of story, isn't it telling about where we are in our culture when a movie about eighth grade has got to be a rated R movie?
Right.
I mean, how?
Yeah.
Where is this world at? I mean, and we need to like talk to our kids about it, because seriously, eighth grade is a rated. I mean, they're not even old enough to watch the movie without going to with their parents, right. And this is what they're living on an everyday basis. This is it's got to be a very true and like reaction to what eighth grade is like. And
oh, the amount of F-words I heard at an eighth grade football practice is just it's remarkable. And you know, and we're kind of getting close on time here, but this movie is not an indictment on the generation either. I think that's the great thing about it. Is this isn't a, hey, old people, let's look at how bad this generation is. That's not at all what this movie was. It was actually very endearing and telling just what kids in this universe exist with. And I'm not going to use the word unfortunate. It just is what it is. And I think that out of some of the crappiness that happens at this level and with social media and the connectivity, you know, extrapolating the challenges, there's a lot of greatness that's going to come out of this group.
Listen, Eighth Grade by Bo Burnham is in theaters now, including the Palms 10 Movie Theater in Muscatine, Iowa. And if it's at your local theater, you owe it to yourself to check it out, because it'll definitely be something that you'll talk about and tell your friends about, and you'll have a good experience and a lot of things to take away from it. And that's what you want to have after a good movie, is good conversation.
Yeah.
And you get excited for what someone like a Bo Burnham will do next.
I think it's a great movie, a date movie to go with your spouse, your parents. You know, don't go with your parents. I'm saying, you know, you and like me and my wife are parents. This is a movie that I think we would have really enjoyed to sit and watch together, because of just how uncomfortable and everything it would make you. Not as uncomfortable as the Nun trailer made me in this in this movie, though.
There's also a poster for the Nun in the hallway here at the Palms 10. So thank you for listening to the One Seat Buffer podcast. This is Tony Tone.
Joel Krausar.
Gucci.